Hello and welcome to the Taskmaster Podcast. We are starting from the beginning, baby. This episode is about Series 1, Episode 1 of Taskmaster, Ground Zero. We are going to proceed linearly. Is that a word? We're doing Episode 1 today and Episode 2 next week. That's how it's going to work. We're going to be chatting to a special guest about that episode. We're going to go into detail about the tasks. We're going to discuss our memories from those series. We're going to go through everything. It's going to be very exciting indeed. I'm Ed Gamble, by the way. Should have mentioned that. Not Richard Herring. There was a lot of chat about maybe the ownership of this podcast changing hands to Richard Herring, winner of Series 10. No, that's not how the podcasting world works. I will hold on to this podcast with an iron fist until the day I die. Thank you very much. Now, obviously, a lot of us are in a lockdown situation at the moment. So why not watch along and then listen to this podcast? It's really exciting what you can do. You can go and watch Episode 1, Series 1 of Taskmaster now, then listen to this podcast and get some cracking insights. And then next week, we're going to be talking about Episode 2 of Series 1 of Taskmaster. So you can watch that before you listen to that. It's going to be a very exciting journey and I want you to join me on it. Now, obviously, you'll need access to those episodes. Where will you get that? Well, all four. Where else? All four. Go to channel4.com and you can find every single episode of Taskmaster so far. Watch, enjoy, listen. We are going to have a lot of fun. So, special guest this week. It couldn't be anyone else. Alex Horn is back on the Taskmaster podcast talking about the origins of Taskmaster and this first episode and all of that stuff. He's got so much to say about it. There's so much I didn't know. And if you have any questions for our future guests, taskmasterpodcast@gmail.com. Email in your questions. But without further ado, let's get on with this. Here's Alex Horn. Alex Horn, welcome back to the Taskmaster podcast.
Thank you, Ed Gamble. It's lovely to be back.
It's great to have you here. I'm thinking of calling this maybe Taskmaster Podcast Rewind because we're going all the way back to the beginning. Do you like that?
Oh, that's such a cool name, actually.
But we're going to be discussing Series 1, Episode 1 of Taskmaster, Alex.
Wow. There was an episode before that, which no one has ever seen. There was a run-through, a show zero, it's called, in the biz. But I guess that we filmed it, so I guess it's out there somewhere. That would be good.
Well,
it
feels like you should have sent me that, so we could have done an episode on Show Zero.
That's for after this set of podcasts. We'll do another rewind.
We're going to rewind all the way back to the true beginning. I see.
And then we'll go back to Edinburgh 2000 and whatever.
Yes, because that's when it started. You did it as a live show at the Edinburgh Festival, which I think people sort of generally know, but I'd like to hear the story in more detail, please.
Well, I'd love to tell it again, Ed.
Painful detail, please, Alex.
Well, I haven't told it for about a week, so it'd be nice to tell that story again. It's the thing when you have to do publicity for the show that you have to trot out. But I like telling the story because luckily it's all true. So the story is that my wife had a son in May 2009 with me. So I didn't go to Edinburgh that year. That was the year that Tim Key won the Perrier Award. I found out whilst at the Greenbelt Festival, which is a Christian festival, which was quite peculiar. But actually, I had a very nice time. There was a thing called Hymns and Beer, and it was brilliant. Everyone just sang songs and got drunk. Anyway, so I found this out and felt very un-Christian. I'm not a Christian anyway, but anyway, I felt very envious of Tim. So I was at this festival and I decided that I would set up my own. I wasn't allowed to go to Edinburgh that year because we had this newborn to look after. The following year in Edinburgh, I would do a competition and Tim would be in it, but he wouldn't win it. That was my plan, to get revenge on him. So I think 2 weeks later, I sent an email to 20 comedians, not including you. I don't think we knew each other at all at that point.
We didn't really know each other. That's why I'm willing to let that go.
Fine. Greg has not let that go. He's reminded me this many times. Because one of the comedians was Steve Hall, who was also in We Are Clang. I think Marek was probably involved somewhere. So Greg was deliberately left out because I was scared of him and I didn't really know him either.
Yeah.
So I asked 20 comedians.
Though.
He is scary. Still, to this day.
Yeah.
20 comedians, if they wanted to take part in this thing called The Taskmaster, it had a The in those days, I was going to set them a challenge every month. And they wouldn't know who each other was till halfway through for some reason. That was a surprise. And they all said yes, except for one person. Do you want to guess which comedian didn't say yes? That's a little tidbit for you.
And they didn't say, did you? Because you did this twice, didn't you? You did it for two years in Edinburgh. Did they say yes the year after?
No, I didn't ask them the year after. But they have since been on Taskmaster, which is a bit unfair on some
really?
Other people. Yeah, and they're great. They're one of my heroes.
Oh, Frank?
No.
No. Who's one of your heroes?
One of my influences in terms of my live shows.
Interesting. Mm. What your we're live sort of shows the same, are quite sort of rude, the same person. Quite rude,
yeah.
offensive, edgy humour.
Blue
humour. You're sort of the same person.
Yeah.
I can't guess now. I'm desperately trying to scan through the previous contestants, and I can't.
Gorman.
Gorman said no.
Gorman said no. He was very polite. No, he said I'm just too busy, and if I did this, I would have to go all in.
Yeah.
And, you know, that was the height of Gorman's crazy shows. I don't know who came in as a substitute for Dave Gorman. The rest said yes. Then in Edinburgh, I did a summary of the 12 tasks, and it all got very messy and drunk, and it was 3 hours long. I think it started at midnight, and it was. You know, it was a really fun evening, and that was meant to be that, but we did it again.
So at what point did you think, I feel like this has TV potential, or was that someone else telling you that?
It was the mighty Avalon telling me that, our management company.
Yes.
But they were completely right, and they weren't pushing at all. They just said, you know, that was interesting. Let's put some cameras on it. But yeah, we filmed the next one deliberately to try to use it as a pitch to TV companies. It was still meant to just be fun. I don't think I saw it as a TV thing, but they did. And they were right to do that. And it's funny, Edinburgh, I don't know about you, but I never thought of Edinburgh as a TV testing ground. It was always just a live thing.
And have a laugh. And those late night gigs are the funnest thing about Edinburgh, I think.
Yeah.
The drunken late night experience.
Yeah.
Was there any reluctance on your part to sort of format the show? Because obviously it was formatted to an extent, but it sounds like a pretty loose live experience. Because obviously when you're making something for TV, you then have to go, well, we're going to do this every week. This is what's going to happen. We've got a rigid structure to it. Did that sort of feel weird doing that initially?
No, I think I was so young and naive that, you know, I was just excited by the idea. Also needed to pay for this baby. But I think by the time it went on telly, I'd had three babies. So
you should never buy a baby when you don't have the money already.
Yeah. Well, I'd got a loan. I'd got a sort of baby pension or something. The formatting of it was quite fun. Andy Devonshire was in it from the beginning.
Oh, wow.
Who is the director. So he was in the pitch meetings and we, you know, he was very helpful. We designed all sorts of weird things. There was going to be 10 people in it at the beginning. And then they were going to be in a sort of hive structure above the stage. The five contestants were going to be sort of up there and then brought down one at a time to do tasks. So it went through quite a lot of different versions of itself before becoming pretty much what the Edinburgh show was.
So how did you pick these series one contestants? What was the thinking? Mm. Because the chemistry is excellent, as it always is, but I think you sort of nailed this series in particular because it's a good set of people.
I suppose it's a bit like Life, Ed, in that when you look back at it, you think, well, I think, God, if something had gone wrong in the casting there, probably nothing, there may well not have been any future series. And equally, it was a bit of a house of cards because Greg wasn't dead cert. He was only going to do it if the cast was, you know, it was all up in the air, really. So yeah. Greg was only going to do it if the cast was right. Frank was going to do it if Greg was going to do it and if the cast was right. The rest was fine. But even Tim wobbled about it because he doesn't appear on panel shows. He doesn't particularly enjoy panel shows. So Josh, Roisin and Romesh were our sort of dead certs.
Yeah.
But they weren't big in those days. You know, Romesh wasn't Romesh Ranganathan back then. He was just someone who... He'd been nominated for the Perry, I think, but no one could pronounce his name. He was that guy. And you knew he was funny, but yeah, he wasn't as huge as he was. Josh was reliable, but he didn't have a sitcom. And I guess we were mates. The four of us knew each other a bit.
Yeah.
I did get nominated for the Perrier that year and didn't win, but Frank was presenting the award to John Kearns and then came over to me and said, I'll do Taskmaster. So I felt like I'd won.
So you were the real winner that day.
I was the real winner. And once he said yes, Greg signed on the dotted line. Everyone else said yes, and we were off. So the casting was just get Frank.
Yeah.
Really. So I think once you've
it's
got
a good
Frank,
rule for life. Just yeah, get Frank.
That's comedy royalty on Dave. You know, Dave is such a brilliant channel, but it's sort of a leap for Frank to do a new program on Dave, I suppose.
Yeah, absolutely.
He trusted me, which is very nice of him. I had to have lunch with him to talk about it, which is horrible. You know,
you're nervous.
I was really nervous. I was nervous about how I was eating. I had to eat and talk at him. And he just said, just talk to me, Alex. Oh, God.
How did you, in the early days, when you were trying to convince Frank to come and do the show, for example, how did you sum up the vibe of Taskmaster? Because we all know it so well now. We love it. We know the sort of show it is. But how did you sum it up to people when you were pitching it, when you were telling people about it?
I think I was able to use the Edinburgh shows as examples of the sort of thing. But obviously it had to be telly-friendly. So it's not, they wouldn't have a month to do these things. They'd have 20 minutes or an hour. I think, and I might be wrong, and this is probably a bad secret, but I think I remember telling all five of them one task that was going to happen.
Right.
Just to give them an example. I felt like I had to give them that because they, you know, the show didn't exist at that point. So I think I told them all about the crying task, which was get as many tears as possible into an egg cup. But not one of them remembered or did any planning, as was obvious on the show. But I think that was a good example. That I love that task, and I think it's a really good example of a good Taskmaster task. Yeah, so I told them that to persuade them, and that sort of pricked their comedians' antennae.
Yeah, why not? So, prize task one, the most unusual thing. It is funny watching this back and seeing how far these things have come and how specific they have become from... You did all the general ones, series one, most unusual thing. And now, certainly in my series, we had thing you most like to find in a field.
Can I tell you my favourite ever prize task was in series four, which was get the best signature on the most unusual piece of fruit, I think.
Yes.
And Noel Fielding got David Suchet on a
broad bean.
But I think that lot pulled out of the bag and he actually got David Suchet to sign a run of it. A broad bean. Yeah, there's no way 80% of the comedians would go to those lengths. You would, I think.
You know I would.
All right, well, this... Yeah,
but
you're
most,
right.
The most unusual thing.
It's a very broad category. Very broad. And, yeah, and so slightly disappointing results. I mean, I'd forgotten these.
So Frank kicks it off, doesn't he? Frank's the first ever person to bring in a prize on Taskmaster.
Yes, it's always alphabetical, which people have started noticing. They sit in alphabetical order, and the first episode, we go through them alphabetically, and then it changes after that. So Frank's up first. Grape scissors.
Mm. I mean, quite unusual. I mean, I'd never heard of grape scissors.
Yeah, I think typical Skinner, really. It's quite a classy item, and he has got a breadth of knowledge that no one else since Skinner in all the series has had. You know, he's got an anecdote about everything, and they're all funny, and he's got a lot of things. So, yeah, pretty good from... Not a bad start. Quite an odd start to a comedy series, but great series.
I think it does sort of mark it out as different straight away, that you've said, bring the most unusual thing. Frank's brought grape scissors. I think in any other show, you'd email Frank and you say, what are you going to bring in? He'd say grape scissors. Then a producer will go, yeah, it's a good starting point. Maybe we can build
a dildo
on that. Yeah. But no, in Taskmaster, you say what you're going to bring, and that's what you bring.
Josh brought in a Plymouth Argyle signed football and learned very quickly that you should never mention football in Taskmaster.
It's not a sporty audience. Greg's not particularly sporty.
Greg just hates sport. He hates football and doesn't get it. And it does make him angry. And it's, you know, it's one of his go-to areas. He has, as we know, go-to areas. And he hates youth and he hates football. So, 1 point for Josh. And I think that was an immediate 1 point, which is amazing because Roisin's is a picture of Greg on a bench.
I mean, it's nice to see. I'd forgotten this, that... Roisin is the originator of bringing in a picture of Greg. Rod Gilbert did it time and time again in Series 7, but bringing in an offensive picture of Greg was in Episode 1. Should have been punished more heavily for that, I think. That's quite how much Greg hates football.
It's not very unusual. Greg does sit on benches.
Yeah,
Ramesh got 3 points for his snow globe. How did he argue that?
I think there's more a case of Greg hated Josh's and Roisin's rather than Romesh's, because it's not that unusual. It's his kid. It's a personalised snow globe with his kids in it. I mean, you're right. It's not a great start to the prize task, is it?
It's not great. But then Tim Key did bring in the reindeer skull, and there were two points in this show where I remember Greg going, yes, this is what the show is about.
Yeah.
One comes in the next task, which is a very obvious point. But yeah, the reindeer skull, it's an unusual item. It's from Tim's life. We always try to make things. We encourage the contestants to bring something in from their world.
Yeah.
Tim had just done a short film about Santa with Tom Basden and had brought home a reindeer skull. So yeah, 5 points to Tim and we're off.
Tim Key, what did you bring in?
Reindeer skull.
That, my friends, is how to play this game.
And now let's talk about the first task proper. In the lab, there is a watermelon. Eat as much watermelon as possible. You have 1 minute. Your time starts when you open the door to the lab. Now, quite rare to see a task that starts in one room and then you've got to go through to the other room. That seemed like a little
shift. Yeah, I'm thinking about that. We should do that again soon because it's a good one because it means they can prep as much as they want. That was the idea, that they would think about it, which obviously Roisin didn't do. But yeah, they had as much time to plan. You know, in theory, they could come back the next day. But I like it as a task because of that. If it was just eat this watermelon and they could see it, then you don't have to build up.
I hadn't even thought they could come back the next day. That's the thing. No one in this series is really thinking outside of the task because it's a new thing, because they've not seen the show before. So their approach, it's a true control experiment. In that you are seeing people's true personalities and how they would actually do things because they're not operating in a world where Taskmaster exists.
All true. Although, somebody, do you know this fact about Taskmaster, that somebody did road test some of the tasks? Should we leave that as a little secret?
Do you want to leave it as a secret?
One of the comedians who has been in the show since was he was a newer comedian at the time. So we got him in, and it was the only time we've ever done it, to test some of the tasks. And I think we stopped it after about an hour because it was obvious it was going to be fine.
Yeah.
But you're right. Yeah, these guys were the control.
It is also, this is just a small point, it's mad how bare the sitting room looks.
Mm.
It's because there's not really anything on the walls, because I guess you sort of build it up as you go through the series. There's the picture of Greg, which has stayed consistent in that it's always based on an artist.
Yeah, so we've moved on to themes rather than artists. So it was Andy Warhol, wasn't it, in series one?
It was indeed. But you're right, they had a chance to prepare. Josh really prepared and got quite a lot of implements, but attacked it like an old woman. Spoiler warning, Josh wins this series, but you could not guess that from the first episode, the way he gingerly does everything.
Mm. Very average in all the tasks. He was he lost the prize task, but middle of the road for all the rest of them.
Yeah, really was in episode one, for sure. And the other thing we notice is that your measuring metrics are in place from episode one as well.
Are they? That's good to hear.
Yeah, you use mice as the metric. So you do however many mice their watermelon weighed, apart from Roisin, who gets so little that you have to transfer it to Rolos. It's one Rolo she gets.
Rolo's a good choice by me, I think. That's a funny thing. Mice, I'm slightly disappointed by, because as you will have seen in the New Year special, I've gone back to rodents to measure a very similar amount of grams in that episode. But it's hamsters I've gone on to after the 10 right. series.
Well, that's okay. That's okay. You move on to hamsters. That's fine. You've still got plenty of choices. Roisin thought there would be a melon buffet, and that gives us the first title of the first episode. When did you make that decision that it would be quotes from the show that would be titling the episodes?
That's a good question. I don't know the answer. I imagine it was the Andes who came up with that idea, not me. As usual, I get all the credit, but don't deserve it. I think it was in the edit. I think it was definitely, you know, not a decision at any point before we filmed it.
Yeah.
I think it was going to be called episode one or not have a name at all. But I think it was Andy Devonshire who thought it would just make the show stand out and look a bit more interesting to give it a name. And so it has consistently been a quote from the show, and ideally not like a big moment, something you have to search out for. The New Year special, actually, you barely hear. I think I say the title and you barely notice it. I quite like that when it's hidden. Let's give Andy the credit for that.
It also adds an extra layer of competition to the show, I think, certainly in my head, where when I went into the show, I was very happy to have won, already knew I won, knew how I'd done in the tasks. But when it was broadcast, I set myself a new thing in my head of going, please, can I get at least one episode named after something I
That's
said?
That's interesting. I think we do try to spread it out. We don't want people, you know, we don't want it all to be Bob Mortimer quotes, which would have been very easy.
Yes.
So how many did you have? Did you have a couple?
I think it was only one, you know.
Oh, that's a shame, because normally people have two.
Yeah, I think it might have been only one.
One's about right, because Greg... It's a good one. Greg and I would normally have a couple or one. So, yeah, one's fine, Ed.
Mm. I think Acaster got like five. That's why I was angry. Really angry about that. Romesh's attempt. Let's talk about it, because it's often the thing that is used as a byword for Taskmaster, and the moment that watermelon hit the floor is often talked about by people as the moment the show really kicks off and establishes itself.
I think talked about by Greg in the episode as well, really. So yes, that's what this show is about. So it was our very first filming day, and it was the last task of the day with Romesh. I think in those days we only filmed about three tasks a day, maybe four or five tasks a day. Not you know, nowadays we do maybe eight.
Yeah.
Because we didn't know what we were doing, and there was only six episodes. So it was the last task of the day, and he inhaled the watermelon and then went to the toilet for 20 minutes, but sort of leaning over it being sick. And he'd got this massive bit lodged in his throat. And I think we filmed it all, so there's footage of that somewhere. But we thought he was going to die. He thought he was going to die. And it was so horrible. And we thought that was going to be it. We're going to be pulled off air. We weren't even on air. It was
Can you
awful.
Believe that a universe exists where Taskmaster was cancelled before it got to the air because Romesh died choking on watermelon?
Well, a lot of shows cancelled, I suppose. Almost every comedy show cancelled.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was awful. I mean, we definitely knew it was funny when he was doing it, when he was doing the eating, because he was sort of a bit sick in the room. Not really sick, but what do you call that? Regurgitating
bile, sort of some pink bile.
Oh, it was horrible. And I rubbed him on the back, and I wasn't very sympathetic. I didn't know what to do, to be honest.
So Romesh often gets credited with that, but I think we need to talk about how good it is for Taskmaster that Roisin did nothing, because it's the comparison with Roisin that I think sums up Taskmaster the most.
You're right.
The fact that everyone does it differently, and Roisin dithers for 56 seconds, I think it is, and gives her 4 seconds to eat.
It couldn't have been better.
And then she puts her face into the watermelon and just, I believe she says, I've just scraped it. Grazes it. She said, I've just grazed it.
Yeah, no, that, I mean, this is definitely classic Taskmaster stuff, in that she does that one extreme, Romesh does the other, Josh and Frank sort of in the middle, pretty ordinary stuff, which is great, and then Tim cheated, so that's perfect.
That's what you want. That is the full spread.
Yeah.
Did you know as you were filming the task that it was going to be the opening task, or did you look at all of them in front of you and decide
definitely
that was the
not.
One that sums it up?
People do often ask me that, how we pick the tasks, and it's never to do with points. It's always to do with balance and, you know, what will work in the show. But I think, I guess we probably decided fairly quickly that's a good opener.
Yeah.
Because there's some cleverness to it in that they can plan their assault on the watermelon. But also it's just visually, you know, it hopefully grabs you. If you don't like it, then that's fine. You know, the show's not for you.
If you're in any doubt about the tone of this show, now you know. There's five comedians being forced to eat as much watermelon as they can whilst wearing a white boiler suit.
Task two, another absolute classic. We've had Richard Osman on this very podcast say that this is the definitive Taskmaster task for him. Paint the best picture of a horse whilst riding a horse.
Mm. Yeah, I often say that it's my least favourite, because...
Really?
Well, I think it was thank God that Roisin refused to get on a horse, because without that, you've just got five people on the same horse, painting the same horse. For me, there's no real variety to it, and there wasn't any room for the comedians to do anything inventive. Like, they could be funny, because it's funny to see them on a horse trying to paint a horse.
Yeah.
But I think we were doing all the funny, and they just had to go along with our joke, really.
I guess the variety comes from the results and their paintings.
I much prefer a task where we're doing half the work, coming up with a scenario, and they have to complete the scenario.
Yeah, filling in the gaps, yeah.
Yeah, and we literally had to, they had to be trained how to ride a horse before doing the task, just for 20 minutes. They had no choice about anything to do with it, really, except for Roisin, who refused. And that was brilliant that she did, because it lent it much more variety.
So why did Roisin refuse? Let's get some behind the scenes gossip here. Why wouldn't Roisin get on that horse?
I think she was well within her rights to say, I'm scared of horses. I've never ridden a horse. I don't want the first time I ride a horse to be whilst also painting a horse on telly. Horses Fair are terrifying. Enough. And we had to invent this weird gauntlet system. And it was quite heavy, this canvas on your arm. So, she just said, I don't want to do it. But she never said, I don't want to do the task. She just said, I don't want to do it that way. And so they did have to learn on that horse that she rode. They all rode that little horse, first of all.
Okay, so you didn't have to bring in a horse simulator. That was something that was on site anyway.
No, it was such a lengthy task. I think that's why I don't like the task either. There was not much spontaneity to it. Well, they didn't know the task before they had to learn how to ride a horse.
Right.
But it was a lengthy sort of process of ride a horse, then ride a real horse, then get off, then open the task, and then do it again. So the whole thing was 4 hours, I think.
See, that's mad because... that you gave them that much training to ride a horse. I did a task on a steamroller and you pretty much went, that's go.
Press this button, yeah.
Press this button to go.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, good point. No, I guess horses are slightly more dangerous. But, and it was snowy on Romich's day. It was, yeah, fiddly task. But, I mean, definitely it's the task that we used to describe the show and to... It was on all the posts. It was a poster campaign that year, I think. The picture of all the contestants and me and Greg and a big horse in the background and then just the line. So it, you know, it does sum up the show, but for me as a purist, it's not my favourite.
I 100% cannot paint a horse whilst on a horse. I don't even get on it. I'll meet him, but I've met loads of horses. That's what I do. I meet the horse and I decide not to get on them. It's my history of horses.
Is this the only task ever to use a live animal?
No. There have been chickens and dogs. There was a task in series 4 where we did chickens with Lolly and then bird flu came, so we had to move to dogs.
Yeah.
there may be a live animal in a future series.
That's exciting to know.
And there was a child called Nell in one of the series. I don't know if you'd call her a live animal, but she was a toddler.
Yes, live animal. Yeah. Also, this is really geeky now, but interesting way of presenting the paintings, which I don't think you do now. You present the paintings and don't tell Greg who did them until he's scored them, and then you show them doing them on the horse. So you don't show the actual task happening until we've seen the results of the task, and you don't tell Greg who did them until he scored
them. Yeah, that's really interesting. I've completely forgotten that. So we should do that again. Do you lose the moment of funniness when you've seen how bad they are at doing the task and then the flashing up of the picture?
You definitely do, but also it's still funny when you show all the paintings because just the variety of them and how bad, like, Tim's is, for example.
That never stops being funny, weirdly. I always find that weird. When we say, let's see them all at once, it's always funny. To me, I'm not saying, I'm not saying to the audience. To me, I just... Yeah, the art tasks, we always do them and think, is that fine? And they're always good. There's a really good one in the future series coming up.
Also, before we get into the scoring, Greg, in this task, says he's seen The Matrix. He makes a comment that he's seen The Matrix. And in Series 7, he claims that he hasn't seen The Matrix.
I love it. Brilliant.
Just a quick shout out.
I mean,
out
that could just be his brain.
Yeah.
Forgetting that he's seen The Matrix.
Just forgotten The Matrix.
I've got a little bonus fact. If you want a bonus fact for this episode.
Yes, please.
Tim's portrait of the horse, which looks more like, is it a rat?
Greg says a rat or an anteater, he mentions.
Well, that made it into the trailer for Series 10 on Channel 4. That
really?
We had to dig up the original picture. We've kept all the artwork. And, that is in the trailer. So if you look that up on YouTube, you'll find his picture there.
So do you keep all the artwork in like a special storage place? Have you got like, is it like the ark at the end of Indiana Jones?
Sort of. I think it's Big Yellow Storage Company. Oh. It's one of them anyway. And it's all just piled up in a heap. But yeah, we never throw stuff away and I don't really know why. I do find them fascinating to look at and they do bring back nice memories. Obviously, this is very culty sort of stuff. Most people wouldn't care at all.
So Frank Skinner wins that task with a quite beautiful picture of a horse. And what's lovely about that is it marks a real moment in his life because he says after he did that task, he then took up painting again.
Yeah, and then presented the portrait program. He is a real arts connoisseur. It did light a fire in him that he didn't know was kindling. Yeah, that's lovely. And the picture was really good, considering he was riding a horse. Not at great pace, but there was no rules about that. See, I think that's what I would do differently now. I think I'd probably say you have to be painting at a certain speed. I think, did we say the horse has to be galloping while you're painting?
No, because the horse is not galloping in any way. The horse is just going around and trotting in a circle.
Yeah, see, for me, if that's Series 13, I've got a speedometer, and when it hits 15 miles an hour, I'm shouting paint.
Romesh gets 4 points. Josh gets 3 points, which I was surprised by. I thought he'd be more scared of the horse than Roisin. And I only know this because once I had to get on the back of a motorbike taxi to get me between places.
It's the coolest thing in the world.
It's the coolest thing in the world. I had to get from a television show to a corporate gig and then back.
And you felt
again.
Like you were the guy?
Of course I did, yeah. And the guy riding it was so cool, and he can chat to you through a little microphone in your helmet. Yeah. And he was telling me about all the comedians that he's had on the back of the motorbike before. And he said he had Josh Widdicombe on the back of the motorbike, and Josh demanded he go about 3 miles an hour because he was so scared.
Well, that thing, you're not actually that cool. You're just clinging to the back of a cooler man.
Just holding on to a nice dad.
Yeah.
So three points for Josh. 2 points for Tim Key for the Anteater. And I think quite harshly, given that it was because of a fear, Roisin gets 1 point for not completing the task properly.
Yes, and that probably set her tone for the series as well. She was last in this episode and last throughout.
Task three, empty the bathtub, which another simple top line task.
Yes, it's an interesting task, this. Yeah, I would happily have this again if we ever repeated tasks, just because I think there are definitely clever ways of doing it. I think now you'd be smashing the bath. Someone's going to be taking a sledgehammer to that bath, aren't they?
Now, that's what I thought, but included in the task is you must not remove the plug tip or damage the bath.
God, maybe we put too many caveats in that task.
Because you're not... Yeah, it's fastest wins. You must not remove the plug tip or damage the bath. Time starts now.
Oh, maybe it's fair enough. What would you have done?
I think you've just got to go for it. I think in that scenario, you've basically got to do what Tim or Romesh did. Again, they sort of took their melon technique to it. Tim's first thought is getting the bath. I mean, well, he's done whole shows where he gets in a bath, right?
Yeah, I really remember saying to the crew, Tim's getting that bath. There's no doubt about it. And I was so pleased when he did. Another cheating moment for Tim. So he got reduced to 1 point, did he?
Yeah, he got 1 point because he, I think he accidentally took the plug out and then saw the plug after he'd finished the task, realised that would be an issue, and then surreptitiously popped it back in.
Yeah, and I think won a lot of fans for that. People like a cheat in this show.
People do like a cheat, but we'll come to Dave Gorman in Series 3.
I'm surprised Tim got any points for that. Nowadays, you wouldn't get anything, I think, for that, for cheating.
Yeah, I think Greg was still finding his feet with how harsh he could be.
Fair enough.
Obviously, Tim cheated twice in this episode. But Romesh gets the full 5 points. Now, this moment, you'd say that Romesh is sort of streaking ahead in terms of the series.
Yeah. Strong. He won two of the tasks, came second in one of them. Yeah. Yeah, interesting. In retrospect, I don't think that's a very good task, empty the bathtub. It's pretty basic stuff. Maybe it's a good task for Series 1, but...
I see why you put it in Series 1, though, because it's a simple idea and it's a simple task that seemingly open-ended, and it shows you what sort of people they are.
That's true.
Roisin sort of very gingerly approaches it and is sort of a bit bewildered by the whole thing, which is very funny, and Tim dives in and starts thrashing around. So it does,
it
provide variety.
Worked. Yeah, you're right. But I think now we would put in more layers again. But that's partly because we have to now. We've run out of the broader ones.
Well, do you ever look at things like this, like empty the bathtub, and wonder how you got from there to put the wellies on the giant spider?
When I think of a really good, simple one now, I'm so pleased with myself. It's like a joke, isn't it? If a joke you can tell in 20 words, then it's a great joke. So same with tasks, I think. I don't really like it when the audience has to struggle to remember what all the rules are. Although sometimes that can be funny if it's overly complicated. But if it's one line, it's a winner.
What had you picked up there, Tim?
Picked up
Sorry?
You picked something up there.
Put the plug up, mate.
And then put it back in the bath.
You did do that. You picked up the plug and put it back in the bath, but you disguised your actions.
What?
Of course, because it's cheating.
Now, the studio task is pop up the tent, get in the tent, zip up the tent, pop on the onesie in the tent and emerge from the tent wearing the onesie, fastest wins.
It's one of my favourite tasks, I think, still. One of my favourite life tasks, because it's so stupid. I remember the reading out being really funny.
Yeah.
And there's such a sense of waiting for it to happen when they're all in the tents and you can't see anything. I talk about Big Brother quite a bit because I used to be a runner on Big Brother.
Yeah.
And or a logger even. So I used to sit in the gallery and type up what happens. And some of their games were brilliant. And there was one game on Big Brother where they had to sit in a sack for as long as possible, I think. Or no, in a box, in a cardboard box. And it was the person who stayed in the box longest won the food or something.
Yeah.
But because it's Big Brother, they could be in there for hours and hours. So you just saw boxes and then they and heard the voices. And it was so funny. So I think that was probably an influence on this.
It is very funny, that moment where they're not all in the tents. This is why it made me laugh as well, is because there's three of them who get in the tents to put the onesie on. You're just waiting for them to emerge. And whatever they come out in is funny. So I think Josh coming out third in the pink unicorn onesie is very, very funny. But Roisin and Ramesh never get in the tent. So the other three realise you can erect the tent and then pull it over yourself and it's still zipped up. But for some reason, you pan along and Roisin and Ramesh are just behind their tents.
I remember screaming, "You're not in the tent! You're not in the tent!"
And it's a very rare, angry and flustered Alex.
Yeah, well, they weren't in the tent.
But normally, I think now, you would just let that unfold.
Yeah.
And then at the end, afterwards. You go, well, you weren't in the tent, you don't get any points.
Yeah.
But during it, you're get in the tent. Why aren't you in the tent? They're not in the tent.
That definitely panicked, thinking, well, the task won't work if you're not in the tent. What do we do? We can't redo it. Because the studio tasks are really, they are nerve-wracking because you only have one shot at it.
Yeah.
And it's the climax of the show. And sometimes they don't work very well. And you can rescue it a bit in the edit. But if they don't work, they don't work, really. So they're an odd moment in the show. They're the bits we do road test. The team road test them heavily.
It's very very intense doing the studio task sometimes. And obviously I've done it with the studio audience there. I can't imagine what Series 10 was like doing it.
No different.
So
weird.
Silence. Really?
So weird. No difference. Because it's all about the competition. You know, you're up against the four other people. So yeah, they honestly didn't miss the audience at all.
Yeah.
I mean, I missed them. In general, but in that task, it didn't miss him at all. Really weird. So who won? Oh, Tim was out first. He was very pleased with himself with the tent.
Yeah. Yes.
Another little fact on that was that the choice of onesies is all comes down to what we could clear. So there's plenty of things we wanted them to come out dressed as, but we weren't allowed to.
Frank is in the Union Jack onesie, of course.
Yeah, I guess we thought that fitted his persona somehow.
He's British.
He's old-fashioned. I mean, in the show, we paint him as a sort of pensioner.
Yeah. Well, he doesn't help with the grape scissors.
Can I say I'm 58? I might never come out of the tent.
Let's chat about the tiebreak.
So it's a tiebreak between...
Between Frank and Ramesh.
Yes, that's correct. And it's a good bit of folklore that Ramesh comes second overall in the series. I hope that's not a spoiler, but never wins an episode.
Wow.
One of the few people who never wins an episode. And even though he did tie first place in the very first one. So he must have lost the tiebreak. What was the tiebreak? I can't remember.
Find Alex, fastest wins.
That's funny because that's one of the few tasks we have done again. Oh, no, we didn't do that again. We did hide from Alex later on.
Yeah, you did hide and seek in series four. Yeah, which is a legendary Lolly Adafopi task, which we will come to discuss in a future episode.
Yeah. Oh, that's funny. That was a tiebreak because I really enjoyed that one. I remember sitting by the tree waiting for them to discover me. I'm surprised that didn't make it as a real task.
It's nice to have a little break, isn't it, now and again?
Yeah. So Skinner found me quickest. Interesting.
Skinner found you in 1 minute 50 and Ramesh found you in 2 minutes 27.
Oh, what a close race.
Very close race. Did you know after you'd finished filming that episode that it was going to take off in the way that it did?
No, not at all. No, I think we didn't know until after series 4, probably, because... I think they commissioned two series after the first one, but they were both 5 episodes each.
Yeah.
So they were really short. And it's a real shame looking back, I think, because we had such good contestants, but they only got to do half a series in my head.
Yeah.
But I think once we did series 4 with eight episodes and that worked, I think we thought, right, that we're onto something. And also that series, we had, Noel Fielding and Mel, as well as the other three, Lolly and Hugh and Joe Lycett. So, you know, really good names. So by that, at that point, I finally thought this could keep going for a bit. But no, after episode one, you're just wondering if it's any good. I remember my brother afterwards, I was up in the gallery, up in the bar in the grand, and he sort of was very surprised and said, I think it was quite good. And I was pleased he said that, because I really didn't have a clue.
But it is remarkable how much work and how rare it is to do something that's quite good. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's rare that you come out of something and go, actually, that format works.
Yeah. I mean, you know, you've done lots of stuff as well, and you're just so grateful if anything, for anything in life. But yeah, but we do put a lot of effort into, you know, it takes 6 months to make a series. So you want it to, I think that's probably one of the keys to it working, is that we put loads of effort in. We try really hard.
And just think, there's universes that exist where Taskmaster is 10 contestants or a hive of contestants hovering above the studio, come down one by one.
But yeah, it could have been very, very different.
So these emails don't necessarily relate to this first episode. This is from Liam. Does the iPad that you use during the show actually do anything, or are you just tapping away at a blank screen?
Liam.
Maybe this is not such an interesting or creative question, but I've always wondered.
Liam, it does everything. It controls the VTs, it controls the cameras. I'm calling up camera two, zoom in on Greg's face. It controls everything, Liam. Thank you. And I never, ever check the football scores during a record. I quite often like it if there's a big match on during a record. And it keeps me on my toes, but I do wonder sometimes if people in the gallery can see that I'm checking the scores.
Well, there's the gallery, but then also there's a balcony behind you as well. So there's definitely people who can see what you're looking at.
Yeah, I mean, I only do it once or twice. I've never told anyone that I check the scores, but I do.
Was it in our series or a previous? I think it was in our series where there was a running joke that I'm not sure made it, that you use it to look at pictures of muscly women.
I'm amazed I didn't make it, if it didn't.
Here's a slight difference in series one. You've got the iPad on a little branch.
Robot arm. Yeah, that was definitely a difference. And I really felt freed up by holding the iPad in future series. So that was, that's a subtle difference. I don't know why it looks so weird, doesn't it, on that stick on a throne? Doesn't make any sense. So
it does look weird, because it looks like the sort of thing you've just panics ordered off Amazon.
Well, we did, yeah. Yes. That's exactly what happened. I guess we thought, I don't know what the logic was, we thought, I can't be holding something throughout. Pretty weird logic there.
Yeah. This is from Tess in the US. Aside from Richard Herring, what contestant has been the most excited to be on the show, and what task went the most awry from what you expected? So that's two questions. That's double question from Tess there.
From US Tess. I think James Acaster was probably the most excited, other than Richard, and maybe yourself, Ed. But James,
I was very excited.
Knew it inside out and was a little puppy dog, you know, walking into a room full of toys. He was desperate.
Yeah.
And also, I was desperate to have him on it. So it was a symbiotic relationship. And yeah, he lived up to it. Although I reckon, sneakily, he would quite like to have another shot at it.
I don't think it's that sneaky. I think everyone, the majority of people who've done it, would like to have another shot at it.
Sure. Yeah, well,
I don't think it would help. I don't think it would help. Like, I don't think him doing it again, he'd be better at it this time in terms of getting points, because you're only as good as your last task, right? It's task to task.
Are you saying that you're better than him?
Well, I mean, history has shown I'm better than him, points-wise. Yeah.
I think, I mean, I like all contestants, but I would love to see him in a champion of champions.
Well, you can't, because he's not a champion. He came second bottom. You can't even do loser of losers and include James. You'd have to do second bottoms of second bottoms.
Kerry was the winner. Kerry was the rightful winner. And actually, no one begrudged her of it. She was great.
Yeah.
So the other question was, which task went the most awry?
Yes.
Great word, awry. I haven't got a great answer, Tess, in the US. I really enjoyed the team tasks with Rod Gilbert when he sort of managed to sabotage his own efforts. So the one where they had to build a shelter or an extension to the house?
Yes, that's been
an
extension.
And he split off from the group and made his own one. Or maybe James split off. Anyway,
Rod split off to try and make his own one using the garage, and that's when he shut the garage of all the stuff you needed to build an
that's
extension.
Right. There's
a moment in that where Phil and James are getting on with theirs, and then Phil wanders over to see what Rod's doing, and then it goes missing, and James has to come and find him, and he started helping Rod.
Yeah, that was really funny because we couldn't control those three, so. I think in that situation, the director is probably thinking, we can't film two things at once. You know, it's a small crew.
Yeah.
And they're at either end of the house building big things, so it's difficult to film. Plus, they're arguing, so it's very difficult to capture all that. And we did, that's a good example of something we really didn't expect to happen, but we couldn't do anything about. But it's all the better for it, I suppose.
This is a question from Ivy. This will be our final question of the episode, Alex. Why did you only wear a tie for Mel Gedroych's tasks? It's been bugging me for years.
I'm asked that reasonably often, and my answer is very simple. It's because she is Mel Gedroych.
Yes.
She deserves respect.
Correct.
No one else has done yet.
Alex Horn, thank you very much for coming back on the Taskmaster podcast. Could you please rate your experience on the Taskmaster podcast again between 1 and 5 points?
This time, it's a 5.
I think it was a 5 last time, wasn't it?
Doesn't mean it's not 1 this time.
That's true. Thank you very much, Alex.
It's a pleasure.
Well, there we are then. We'll be back next week with another brilliant special guest chatting about episode 2 of Taskmaster Series 1, and we will be proceeding as such from there. Don't forget to watch along. Email in your questions, taskmasterpodcast@gmail.com. Don't forget the Taskmaster shop is also a thing. Go and have a look at that, taskmasterstore.com, and also the YouTube channel, youtube.com/taskmaster. Go and check out all that content. I've been Ed Gamble. I'll see you next week. Bye-bye. We'll be right back.